to get this over so I can go back and watch the tape.
Okay, I want to begin with we just signed Caleb Haney to a one-year contract to come in and compete to make our 53-man squad. With that, we'll open it up for questions, Kevin.
Wait, Jeff,
say
the name again.
Haney?
Yeah, and he is
a quarterback.
Right. Oh.
Is that news
for you? No, I read a source, an NFL source, I think it was his agent. So. Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Given the fact that the extra picks are the goal and you don't quite do also for the ABC, is this particular draft, do you think of more flexibility than most, if not all, the others?
Well, having the additional picks allow you to move up, move back, to do some things if we feel the need to do it, in that we have, 8 picks that we can actually trade to compensatories. We can't move those. So it will allow us, if we choose to do it, to be able to move up to get a player or stay where we are.
I think numbers-wise, we see an extra round, basically, about 32 or 35 extra players that we think are draftable players in this draft. So the pool of players is greater. I think quality of player between 15 and 45 is excellent. You know, I think there's players in every round that we like. It's slotted very well. I think defensively, it's a very, very strong draft. I think offensively, pretty good, too. Think up front on the defense and offensive lines, we see a lot of really good players. I think with the amount of juniors that came out this year, that really bolstered the crop of players. I think 74 juniors came out this year, and that really increased the depth as well.
Yeah, just last year I think it was 6 of the top 7 for trades. Do you expect that kind of opportunity in this draft?
It's hard to predict. You know, Kansas City having the first pick, I think John and Andy's did a very good job of helping their team this offseason. So sitting there with the first pick, we have no knowledge of what could happen with that. I know Eric is real close to David Caldwell with in Jacksonville with the second pick, but it's no way to know up until, you know, people get on the clock.
So you said before the draft that the middle of the defense was an area where you thought kind of was a priority. You've shored up that area through free agency with the moves that you made. How have the free agency moves adjusted or changed the priorities heading into the draft?
It will not. What we've done in the off season thus far in free agency will have very little impact on how we have approached the draft, how we've stacked the board, and how we will take players off the board. We feel like that if there are quality players on the defensive line, at linebacker or at safety, we feel like we still can add more of those players to our team.
Ozzie, in terms of adding on another player, just your thoughts on what he'll bring to this defense?
Lalondo is just getting an opportunity to come and make our 53-man squad. That's it.
Eric, you had said last year that every draft has a theme, and last year was a depth draft. Can you share this year's theme? Do you have a theme this year?
Oh, I don't know. I think we just want to draft players we like on tape. You know, we watch a lot of tape. There's a lot of players to watch this year, which is exciting. I think our coaches and scouts have done a good job. And, you know, we're trying to get better. I think, you know, the idea of winning in the trenches always appeals to us, having a good offensive and defensive line, and then being strong through the middle on both sides of the ball, I think, is really important as well.
Ozzie, I guess you said one of the only negative things about winning the Super Bowl is that you were 5 weeks behind at that point. Do you feel like you've caught up at this point, or have you had to rely on your scouts a little bit more than in previous years?
Well, I think the second part of your question is true. Yeah, we relied on our scouts, our personnel department. But I think since the owners' meeting, the world has slowed down for all of us. We've been able to, you know, have some great meetings on last week where we got the coaches involved. I think the coaches are still able to do some football in the mornings, I think, right, and then do draft and free agency in the afternoon. So I think we have been able to catch up right now, and I feel very good where we are getting ready to get started next Thursday.
This is for Eric Borgio. What do you think of the pass rushers, including some of the tweeners that got the band and linebacker, and just could be good fits in terms of the pass rush?
Yeah, you know, I'd say the when you look at the tweeners, there's going to be value to those guys that play the 4-3 and 3-4, you know, Ansa, Mingo, Werner, those guys, Jones from Georgia. All those guys are talented at what they do in college and have had a lot of production over their college career. Ansa, obviously, is probably the dark horse type guy where there's not a lot known about him, but in terms of the length of his career there. But they all have ability and flexibility to make an impact as a 3-4 outside linebacker or a 4-3 DN. It just depends on the team that takes them. But when you watch film on all those guys, I think you see a lot of them that have that versatility and ability to perform both.
Just pass for anybody. Pass rusher, obviously something every team's always interesting each year, regardless of the guys you already have.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you can never get too many of those, right?
Last year, center was a position of need, but because Matt Burke played all the time, we didn't get to see an awful lot of Geno. Is center still a position you'd like to upgrade in?
Well, we're always going to try to be as good as we can be, you know, at every position, obviously, but Geno did a nice job last year. He played really well in the Bengals game. We felt like that was a big test for him. You know, we had an opportunity to see him against a really good defensive line, and he held up. You know, he's a little more physical and stout maybe than he looks, and he's got great feet. He's a smart guy, and it matters to him. So, you know, he's our center. He's at the pole position right now. You know, he's got probably the edge there. But if we bring in somebody to compete with him, if it works out that way, that'd be great.
The Ravens have had a lot of experience, as you know, drafting towards the bottom of the first round, and you've done quite well with them. Grubbs, Edry, Todd, you guys like that. Is there a way of trying to be successful at the bottom of the first round? Is targeting, finding value in certain positions? Is it a matter of luck? What do you see maybe a common thread on consistently hitting towards the bottom of the first round?
Well, we're not going to give away our secrets. No, I just think we trust our scouts and coaches. We watch these guys starting in the fall, and we watch them in the All-Star games in the combine, and we listen to the reports, the background, the information, and we put it all together, and we pick the best guy. And, you know, it's just kind of creating an open environment where guys can share opinions and making good decisions.
Oz, you talk a lot about the process over 16 years ago. What is the process? Fans talk about the process without having a definition of what it is, but what is the Ravens' way?
I think in the end, that everybody that has an opportunity to look at a player, whether it's a scout, coach, even sometimes our trainers, they get a chance to have some interaction with the players, get the opportunity to give their input. And their input is really valuable. And throughout the whole process, John, Eric, Joe, and Al, we try to gather as much information as we can, and then we let the information drive our decisions.
Ozzie, in terms of money to spend with the draft, is that a concern in terms of how many guys you draft and then the free agents will come in, having still possibly cut a few players here?
Well, with the signing of Caleb today, we're at 68 players. If we utilize all 12 picks, that takes us to 80. Am I correct? If my math, that Alabama math, okay. Mm-hmm. And then we're allowed to have 90, which means we can go after 10 undrafted college free agents after the draft, because with the change that we made going from 80 to 90, even the undrafteds count. I mean, the drafted players count, even whether they're on the contract or not. But in that coach is going to have the rookie minicamp the week after the draft, then we'll probably still be able to bring some guys in and give them an opportunity over a three-day period. And if they show us that they're worthy of signing a contract, then we'll make some personnel decisions at that point.
John, has anything been different for you this year now that after the Super Bowl, I mean the late start and everything else as far as going through this process?
Oh, it's just been shorter, Mark. You know, we've had to condense it. It's interesting, and Eric mentioned it, it seems like there's more players to look at this year than in other years, huh, Joe? Yeah. So there's just been more guys to watch and probably a shorter period of time, but, you know, it's been good. I mean, everybody's done a great job.
Did you guys have on your agenda to sign any of your guys who are going to be free agents next year? Hitta, Jones, is that something that could happen before the season, any of those guys?
Well, we always look to get ahead. I mean, we tried that with Joe a year ago. So will we try to sign some of our guys that will be UFAs? Yes, we will try. It's a little bit difficult in the last year because, you know, they get the opportunity to start to smell free agency and they see what happens to their peers that get into free agency and the market that they command. But we will attempt to probably try to sign some of those guys.
We always ask a lot of questions each year about character issues. With the case of Manti Te'o at Notre Dame, do you characterize the issues surrounding him as character issues, or is it pure football question?
Well, we had that question in our first meeting, and what is the issue? I'm asking you.
The issue of the fictitious
Is that beating woman? Is that using drugs? Is it DUI? I mean, how do you clarify that? I couldn't. Eric, can you clarify?
Nope.
Okay.
I guess the question comes in terms of leadership. Do you trust him as a leader and a member of the football
club? Coach, I'll let you answer that. You.
I think we've answered that. Absolutely, we do. You know, we're comfortable with him. We had a great interview. Look at his body of work. What he's accomplished. Who he is as a person. You know, where he comes from. We feel good about Manti.
Eric, do you think maybe, you know, you guys picking at 32, there's a lot of talk about uncertainty in the quarterbacks and how some teams may, you know, they pick earlier, may want to trade into the first round. Do you think trade that dialogue will be different this year with you guys having the 32 pick and maybe teams making last-ditch efforts to get to that first round?
Well, I think our options are always open, Jeff. You know, we've made trades, I think, two of the last 4 years in the first round. We've made a lot of trades over the years in the second round. We've traded up in the first once or twice, not too often, but a couple times. So we're always open. And what we try to do is come up with a bunch of different scenarios based on all the different things that could happen so that we're ready to make a pick or trade if that happens. And the phone lines are open, and I think we do a good job. Pat Moriarty handles all the trades for us. He does an awesome job. And I think we're in good shape.
Ozzie, how much did you count on people at Alabama to give you information on Rolando McClain? And did you have a conversation with him like, hey, you know, you're an Alabama guy, I'm an Alabama guy, don't embarrass yourself and us?
No. The first person I talked to about Rolando was Joe Ortiz, and he went to Auburn. Just for the record, okay? Joe has a very good relationship with the people that work at the University of Alabama. He's able to get great information. So Joe was the first person that I talked to about Rolando. And as far as how he's going to conduct himself here, he's coming here just to be a part of this football team. I think the guys in the locker room will be able to provide him with the proper guidance that he needs as to the way John wants his football team and his football players to be.
Eric, did you look at the Ivy League a little bit more than usual this year? Do they have some prospects that you or other teams might be interested in? They don't have a great reputation, but it seems like it's gaining a chance.
Well, I think in general, small school scouting over the last couple of years, I mean, we drafted three small school players last year. I think teams are spending more resources trying to find some of those diamonds in the rough. There are players at all levels of football. And I think at the Ivy League this year, there are a couple guys, the Catapano kid who plays at Princeton, the local kid Copeland plays at Penn, Gilman product who we had in a couple weeks ago for a workout, another guy. And then there's an offensive lineman up at Cornell named Treater, who's a solid prospect too, played some all-star games. So I think there are some players there this year. I think our scouts do a good job of finding those guys, identifying those guys early, and we put those guys through the process of the draft and see, you know, how they hold up.
Oz, last year at this meeting, you mentioned that you were going to come out of the draft with a center. Is there one position you can tell us today that you're pretty comfortable you're going to come out of this draft with?
Did you give that away last year?
I guess.
Is that verified?
I would say, you sure I said that last year?
don't let him court you.
No,
very clever. Very clever.
Yeah. Not to give anything away with the board, but I think all four of us would agree. I think in all seven of the rounds, there's a safety we could take.
Remember you said that next
year.
can we get back to the Ivy League question? The Ivy League doesn't have a good reputation. They might take issue with that. Non-academic thing.
This is the first draft since the first year you guys were here that you haven't had Ray Lewis on the team when you're getting ready for the draft. Has that been odd at all?
No, not really, because I think Ray's still here in spirit. You know, I was at a local restaurant, deli on Sunday, and they said, hey, you know, Ray just was in here the other day. So he's still in this community. Ray's still very much a part of this football team. He was here with, John and I were talking about the number of players that, was on this squad when he got here that's been here 5 years with John right now. And Ray has impacted those kids, you know, those guys in our locker room. Ray has impacted Torrey. Ray has impacted KO. So his impact is going to be felt within this organization and in this locker room for a long time. And, you know, when you we talked to Tail, and they know about this locker room and Ray Lewis. So his impact is lasting.
You guys have always had great success going the undrafted free agent route as well in years past. Being that this is such a deep draft, is that going to change in any way, or is there anything different about this year's, maybe the undrafted portion of it, that you guys have had success in years past?
I don't think so. Not the way we're attacking it. Joe Douglas and Mark Acevedo are leading the charge in that, and all the area scouts and coaches are working on it this week. And we've had so much success with it over the years, you don't want to change what you're doing. Obviously, it's tough to make a team in the undrafted route, but we've had success even last year when we won a Super Bowl team. We had three guys that were on our roster at different points in the year that were undrafted and signed with us out. So I don't see any reason to change what we're doing. We just get more aggressive with it and try to find new and better ways to add to it.
John, I know every single draft important, every single draft has its own individual importance, but just looking at this draft individually, how much importance does this one carry for you guys just in terms of continuing to lie the foundation for the future of the team?
Right, yeah, I'd say it's important. You know, it's very important. It seems like, I'm sure we could sit up here and say that every single year, but to me this year it seems like the most important draft, maybe because it's this year, you know, it's the one we're looking at. But, you know, with the transition and some of the guys that we're talking about that aren't here, the transition of our football team, it's going to be very important. You know, it's going to be important we get the right guys. We're working hard at it, and I'm really excited about it. I think our scouts have done a tremendous job. You know, we were in those meetings for the last week, and you see the work they've done and the reports they read and the consensus that we came to on a lot of different players after we hashed it all out. They were very prepared. I mean, they've just done a great job across the board, and that's what really makes the draft. That's where it all starts, like Ozzy was talking about. So, to me, we've got a good foundation, a good basis for having a great draft because of the work they've done.
What do you make of the offensive tackle class, left and right? And just obviously, there are a bunch of guys that are going to go right away, but just the depth after those guys would be great.
Well, I think the three guys at the top are obviously elite players, elite athletes, outstanding players. Other guys, I think, you know, Menelik Watson, interesting story, right tackle at Florida State, one-year player basically, interesting guy. I think Brian Winters from Kent State, left tackle, solid player, good prospect for the NFL, tough, gritty guy. I think Justin Pugh from Syracuse, another left tackle. I think he's a solid prospect, who, you know, junior, tough, physical. And then Ricky Wagner from Wisconsin, right tackle, left tackle, flexibility, big, long guy, good pass protector, tough, smart. So I think it's a very good depth. And again, you basically have different players slotted in every single round. I think there's quality depth all the way through the draft.
Thank you.
Excuse me?
Armstead, the Arkansas Pine Bluff guy as well?
Yeah, small school prospect, good athlete, went to the Senior Bowl, had a good week. East-West had a good week. Lots of potential there as well.
It's pretty solid. It's probably bigger, thicker in the middle than in years past. There's a couple top guys, obviously Tavon, who everyone's familiar with in this city. And then the Tennessee wideouts are two talented guys who have some explosive playmaking ability. But I think if you look like Eric, like really the whole draft, there's guys in each round that can help us. There's a really solid core group of guys in the middle rounds that I think will go in the second or third round that will be, you know, solid, dependable starters in the NFL.
There's a lot of guys in terms of the mock draft projecting that late first round, early second round mix. Robert Woods, DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen, players like that. Just your take on those three guys individually?
Well, Robert is a very polished receiver. He's been doing it for 3 years out there. You know, his first year at USC, I remember him, he wore 13. And you're just blown away by this young kid. And then the next year you go back and you see number two playing for USC, and you're like, God, where'd they get this guy from? And you realize it's the same guy. But, you know, he's been a talented player. He's been really productive this year. Some of the spotlight was taken off of him by an underclassman. But every time he was called upon, he delivered. Keenan Allen is a talented player. He's big. He's physical. He's got real good route running instinct, good hands. Just a really big frame. He knows how to work the blood area underneath. And then DeAndre Hopkins is kind of a blend of the two. He plays inside and outside. Good size, good playmaking ability. Can finish with the ball in his hands. Those latter two guys probably didn't run as fast as you know, in terms of some of the other wideouts out there. But when you put on the film and watch them play and how they attack the ball and they run their routes and they compete, they're all three of them are solid players.
Eric, are there any traps out there with the underclassmen that you really have to be on guard for because they're not fully developed?
Well, I think, you know, historically juniors have been a little more volatile, you know, than seniors, just prediction-wise because of the lack of experience. I mean, you touched on it. You know, they don't have as much experience, so, you know, there's a little bit more guesswork. What we try to do is spend as much time as we can with as many juniors as we can at the combine. And then I think our scouts really do a phenomenal job of getting information between January and March on all the juniors as much as we can to really build a profile. We have the advantage of spending 9 months really getting to know these seniors and really only 2 months getting to know these juniors. So there's a lot of work involved in a very, very short span of time, and hopefully we get as much as we can to make good decisions.
Ozzie, how much has scouting changed from the time you joined Belichick and even the time you were scouted, where it was more about 40 times the strength and the box and all of that, to the point now where the character thing and the kind of people that you want in the building, that sort of background that you want to do, that has nothing to do with football? How much has that changed in 20 years?
The information that's available, the internet, all the different things like that have changed. Players coming out into the draft. I think our scouts go out and scout the same way that they scouted when I started. I know they do. They're just able to get so much more information in a lot of other ways, and where you used to have to be able to only get it from the strength coach, the trainer, maybe an assistant coach. Now our guys talk to academic advisors. They got behavioral trainers at the schools. So there's a lot more information that our guys have to gather when they go out there. But it's for it. At the end of the day, the real good scouts are the guys that can grade tape, because that determines how good a player is going to be.
My character, as if it's always a negative. But obviously there's a positive side to it. With 17 drafts behind you, when you look at an Ogden, a Ray Lewis, a Peter Boulware, have you developed a feel, a formula, a kind of a go-to system to identify the guys who are going to be great character guys?
Well, I see Joe is shaking his head. I think the thing that we have here, and I think Coach can attest it, and he was attesting to it, is that both of these guys started out picking guys up at the airport, just like we got those guys that are in today. And they worked their way up through our system. And when they work their way up through, they learn and understand what it takes to be a Ravens, what Brian wanted, now what John wants. from their players, what Mr. Modell wanted and what Steve Bisciotti now wants. And I think they get a great feel for that. We only have maybe two or three scouts that we've brought in from other places. So having those homegrown guys allow us to be able to groom the type of scouts that we want. And I think they have a very good understanding as the type of player that we want to come into the city of Baltimore and play for this team.
How have you guys processed the new assessment tool, the PAT? How does that factor into everything? What are your impressions?
It was introduced to all 32 teams at the owners' meeting. And we're having it. We're trying to utilize it. I think 5 years from now, it'd be a better tool for us than it will be. I think all 32 teams right now are trying to get the understanding of how to use it. You know, you got no way of saying to be able to take that information and compare it to last year's or 4 years ago. So I think when you ask this question to me 5 years from now, I'll be able to talk to you for about an hour what that test does or don't do.
Is that something that you share with the entire staff or who actually has access?
The league only allows one person to be able to get that information per team, and they want to protect it that way, yeah. Like some of the other tests that we get from the combine.
Where you guys have had the most turnover this offseason has been on the defensive end. I'm not going to have specific positions, but with that being said, do you think this could be a defense-heavy draft where that's kind of the focus? With your 12 picks?
Well, I mean, to say we're not going to take the best players, I would be wrong. But, like, at the outset, they talked about, you know, us taking some, you know, some interior defensive linemen. We could do that. Could we take some inside linebackers? We could do that. Could we take some safeties? We could do that. We won't pass up a good corners. You don't never have enough good corners. You don't ever have enough good pass rushers. So, could we come away and say out of the 12 picks, if we use all of them, 7 or 8 could probably be on defense? Yeah, but they will be the best players at the time we pick them.
John, can you talk a little bit about how encouraged you are? I know the offseason workouts just started, but certain people maybe outside the organization worried about complacency with players, how encouraged you are by the turnout, and how much teaching you have to do, like Ray Rice and Vontae Leach are both not particularly happy with the rules for running backs. How much teaching has to go on with these guys to adapt to that rule of not being able to lead with their head?
Right. Well, as far as the first part of the question, I don't think that's an issue at all. We've got hardworking guys, and our guys feel like they have a lot to prove. You know, I think we've got humble guys and hungry guys, to borrow an Under Armour term, you know, and that's what we're all about. The other part of it should not be an issue because our guys really don't run that way. You know, there's never been – I don't know if I've ever seen Ray lead with the crown of his helmet, you know, square up on a defender and lead with the crown of his helmet. I don't think you could find a clip where Ray has ever done that in his career that I'm aware of. So Ray still have to get behind his pads. He's still going to have to get down and protect himself. But there's never been an instance where he's actually used the crown of his helmet to target a defender. So we should be okay with it. We feel good about it.
Rozzy and John, just looking at left tackle, is there a timetable for considering Bryant McKinney still? And then is Kelechi someone that factors in at all at left tackle?
You got to be the time factor guy.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've had conversations with his agent prior to today. I have a good relationship with his agent, Michael George. John and Juan both have been in communication with Brian, and it's a process. I mean, we use that all the time, but it is a process with Brian. And could he? When we open up our first game this year, whenever that is and wherever it is, could he be our left tackle? He potentially could be. Could K.O. be our left tackle? He could potentially be our left tackle, too. I think we are very open. Like I say, the dialogue has been very good with B-Mac from my standpoint, and I think John will echo the same thing. But if we had to line up today with the group that we had, I think John told Steve Bisciotti that it would KO would probably get that opportunity.
Eric, you've been working with Oz for how many years now directly in this relationship?
Nine? Well, I mean, I've been with us. This will be the 18th year.
Have you seen any signs of this guy slowing down at all?
Not really. I mean, he's just got an iPhone, you know. So I think he's adapting, you know, if anything. So
he goes after it just as hard as he did when he started.
Well, he's competitive. That's what makes him great.
Hey, John, you were a college football coach and did the recruiting thing. Does it just kind of take you back to your roots sometimes when you have the chance to write letters or text some of the guys that maybe not going to be draft picks, but they'd say when they get a text from you that means something to them in terms of the recruiting aspect of the job?
What'd you say about not giving away any of our secrets, you and Eric?
Yeah, we can't talk about that.
Can't talk about that, yeah. I think we all work really hard at that. You know, Joe talked about that earlier, but you know, the college free agents are huge, you know, and what an advantage when you find a guy like Jameel McClain, you know, that can make your team and become a starter. So it's a big part of our puzzle. It's we want to accomplish that, so we're working hard at it.
John, do you have an update on Jameel? And we saw Ladarius in there, and is he on schedule? Everything is going well with him?
Yeah, Ladarius is on schedule at least, you know, maybe ahead of schedule. He looks really good. He should be ready to roll at training camp, it looks like, and we're going to make sure we don't have a setback. That's the most important thing. And Jameel the same way. It's been nothing but positive from the doctors about Jameel. So he's in training mode. He's actually he's going to head out to a week to Los Angeles. There's a certain type of a trainer out there he's going to work with for a week out there. That'll be important for him. But it's just a healing process. There's a certain type of a bruise on his that happens that caused, you know, his issue, but it's going away on schedule. So, you know, hey, we don't know for sure, but I'm approaching it as if Jameel's going to be out there for us, and it looks like he's got a good chance to do that, really good chance of doing that.
Obviously, so much turnover with the roster, and, you know, there was so much panic for a while. It's the first time we've had a chance to speak to you, but after all the dust has settled here, I mean, you have to be pretty comfortable with the guys that were brought in, despite losing and keeping the ball.
Well, you know, this is the first opportunity I've had to talk in front of you, men and women. What happened after we won the Super Bowl, that's something that Steve, John, and I probably started talking about back in October and November as to what this team was going to look like in 2013. So it wasn't that one day we woke up and decided that, you know, we're going to let a lot of really good football players walk away and play for other teams. But we had a plan in place, and we have had to allow the plan to unfold. It unfolded after we won a Super Bowl, which, you know, makes it really, really nice, but it also makes it really, really tough when you go to battle with guys, and then you have to see them, you know, walk away from your organization because we have to prepare for 14, 15, and 16 because Steve has put the four of us in charge of making sure that we remain a competitive football team, you know, over the course of that.
How much of that knowledge is based on what happened after Super Bowl I that you won back in 2000?
Well, I think you learn from it, and I will say this, and I still believe it. If we don't lose Jamal Lewis, we win back-to-back Super Bowls. I just felt like we were that good. We might have been better that next year. But you know what? I think you, in anything you do, whether it's drafting players, coaching players, making decisions on Sunday like John and the coaches, you learn from what you've done before. And I think we've learned from that. I think we like our football team this year. To say that where this team is going to end, I'd like for someone to be able to tell me that we're not good enough to go to the playoffs right now. Can anyone say that? Okay. Well, but then I think what we did is we just wanted to make sure that, you know, when we look downstream, that we were able to keep the Tories, the Pitters. It was guys that we wanted to keep, and if you don't make tough decisions this year, then it'll be tougher to keep those guys in years to come.
What's some of the challenges or differences in coaching a guy who's fresh out of college or a new free agent who's coming to your system and trying to teach him kind of like the Raven way? What are the differences and challenges there?
Well, the free agent coming from another team has a better pool of knowledge to draw from, so he can relate a lot more, you know, information. Basically, it becomes more language. You know, there might be some technique things that are new, but for the most part, he's been through most of everything you're teaching him before, and how is he going to apply it, and how do you put the defense or the offense together? A rookie coming in almost all the time is learning things for the first time. The basic parts of the offense or defense are familiar to him, but the nuances are not. You know, college football is not schematically as complicated as the NFL, so they're learning for the first time.
Blank canvas, or in certain cases it is?
No, I think it's not easier to start with a blank canvas. It takes, there's more, you've just got to fill up more, plus experience. You know, these guys have had experiences, so they know how to play. For instance, you take an inside linebacker. He's seen all the schemes in the NFL that he can see. He knows, or a defensive lineman, he knows all the blocking patterns. In college football, especially nowadays with all the spread offenses and stuff, it's a little more one-dimensional in terms of what he's seen before, so experience is the best teacher, and the more veteran guys have that experience.
Seeing the grass, and what do you think about just in terms of the guys, the flexibility to play in the box or cover?
The safeties? Yes. Well, I think it's a great group of guys. You know, obviously Kenny Vaccaro from Texas is a fine player, senior prospect, outstanding, probably a first rounder. I think you've got guys in the second round, Matt Elam from Florida, Cyprian from Florida International, Swearinger from South Carolina. You got Wilcox from Georgia Southern, Rambo from Georgia, Sean Williams from Georgia. There's a lot of guys this year. We've looked at a lot of them, obviously. We spent a lot of time on all those players, and I think it's an exciting group. Ozzie's already said that there's a good chance that we'll take at least one safety at some point in the draft. And numbers-wise, I think that's very accurate.
Tom, it looks like going into the draft this year that you guys have more spots up for starting spots than you have in recent memory. We'll all assume a safety, linebacker, left tackle, maybe wide receiver, someplace else in the offensive line. Is that fair to say that at this point you have more jobs up for grabs in the starting lineup than in other years?
Yeah, Steve, I don't know. I have not counted them up. Maybe I should, you know, maybe it'd be a good comparison to make, but I have not counted them up. I think as a coach, you kind of assume, you really think like every position is up for grabs. And I mean, I'm pretty sure Joe's going to be our quarterback this year, but you never know, you know. So you've got to prepare for every potential possibility, and we'll do that. But, I like competition. You know, as many jobs are up for grabs, that's better for our football team. That'll make us better.
Can you talk about when you're doing homework on a kid, you talk to all these people about him, you have a good feeling about him, and then you draft him? How rewarding is it to see kind of him develop into a starter and, potentially a Pro Bowl player? I mean, how rewarding is it to do all that work and to have it, come out?
I'll speak on behalf of the scouts on this one. Just, I think our guys, the amount of time they put in, as you mentioned it, talking to academic advisors, you spend so much time getting to know the players, not only as on the film, but as people. And I think when our scouts go into a school and feel like they've really got a guy nailed, and they come back in here and they present him in the meetings, and he ends up where he is on the board, and we draft him. Once we draft him, you're excited about him just to begin with, because you've done the work and you know what you're getting, and he shows up here. And when you see that transpire on the field and him develop as a player, it is tremendously rewarding, individually and really more collectively as a team, because we did it as a group, and it started with one guy who went in there first, and he spread the word, so to speak, and we've all gotten a chance to look at him and identify his strengths and his weaknesses, and to watch it play out in front of you is really fun to see.
John, as you've watched with your coaches different tape, are coaches around the NFL using this year maybe more than ever to watch also how teams are defensing the spread, the read option, and the college offenses that have kind of matriculated more into the NFL the last couple of years?
Probably. I mean, you notice stuff on tape, Jerry, but you really don't have an opportunity to do that when you're watching tape. I mean, you're watching the player, and your focus really is on the player. As Joe said, the scouts do a great job of unearthing the guys and building the guy to a point where the coach has a chance to kind of put the finishing kind of touch on the evaluation. It's the final 5% is all it is, But it takes a coach everything he's got to put that final 5% on there. So that's what his focus is. You know, it's draft time. You focus on the draft. Our guys do just – our guys do the morning. They do football. Ozzy alluded to that. So we're spending time on the read option stuff as well as all the other parts of our, you know, football. And then the afternoon is devoted to the draft.
Anyone had a chance to grade Jacoby Jones on his efforts on Monday nights?
I gave him a 9. You know, I was a little disappointed in Len. You know, I don't know what Len's thinking. He's, you know, is pigeon-toed a bad thing all of a sudden? He's a little biased against pigeon-toed. Len. You all know who Len is, right?
8.
Really? You're an 8?
Well, no. It's an 8.
Oh, right, right. It was low. It was a low grade.
In the end, are you happy he's out doing it just to move the brand forward and have some fun? And he's probably staying pretty good.
I don't care. The brand doesn't matter. I mean, the brand does matter. The brand matters. Steve, the brand matters. But,
set you up on that.
Was there a question there?
Has it been good to see him do this and stay active and stay shaping? Even though you weren't probably the biggest proponent of it.
Yeah, I wasn't, but and Karina talked me into it. So then once she came in and made the case, I was okay with it. I think it's going to be good. I really do. He's working hard. I know that. I mean, they prove that every week. So, you know, we're pulling for him, right? I mean, we're pulling for him here in the building. Guys do talk about it. Guys are excited for him. We've got the text going back and forth, and I kind of look forward to Monday night, you know, and see how he does.
So. You can talk more snaps a receiver. Do you want
how'd she talk me into it? She didn't have to say a lot, Steve.
I just wanted you to get that on camera.
If Jones is getting more snaps as a receiver, do you want him on the field less as a returner?
I think that's a good question. You know, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. That goes for every position. You know, the more guys play in one area, the more it probably lessens their time in other areas, just because you can only get so much time on the field. But we could also say, you know, he's so valuable as a returner, we need to lessen, you know, or control what he does on offense. So we'll definitely be doing a pitch count for him, and we'll just have to see how it plays out, how some of the young guys do. You know, we've got some young returner options who are pretty talented. So we'll just see how it goes. But it's a good point.
For Eric or Joe, tight end, I was throwing out a possibility that you guys would maybe go early, but would that be a position that you might want to entertain at some point in this draft, given that Dennis and also Andrew in the contract years?
Yeah, you know, I'd say really a lot like the other positions. It's a position where you could take a guy in really a lot of the rounds. You're obviously going to have the Ertz and the Eifert and the Escobars, you know, who are probably your top guys. But then you get into those middle rounds, and you'll have another cluster of guys that you'll consider. I do think we can get a good, solid tight end anywhere from the first through probably the fifth, sixth round. It just depends on, if he's the best guy available.
Ozzy, when John was talking about Jacoby and the idea of, you know, trying to kind of have him on a pitch count with balancing, returning in as a wide receiver, does that make it any more of a priority to add a wide receiver so that you can maybe keep Jacoby in the return game as well?
Well, no, I think it's an opportunity for Deontay, for David, Laquan, and for Torrey Gurley, and Tommy Streeter. Those young players get an opportunity to get on the field to see if they can give us the type of production that we need. And I like all of them. I like all of them's chances of playing this year. But just as in any position, could we come away with a receiver? We probably could. But I can't wait to see what those four or five guys that I just named get their chances to play in the preseason.
You know, you mentioned David Reed. David was obviously somebody you guys were signing in the offseason. Just David, I guess, just wondering if the hand would be like about
when he
was to take a receiver.
Well, I mean, you know, David is a guy that he's already proven that he can be a real good teamer for us as a returner on kickoffs and as a cover guy. But when he got the opportunity to play some on offense, he showed some quickness. He showed the ability to get open, and he made the catch when that opportunity was presented. So if he could just stay healthy and get through this offseason program, get into training camp, then I think we're all looking to see what David can do for us this year.
Eric and Joe, just to be clear, are there any positions in the draft that are really thin and absolutely suck?
What do you want me to say? I mean, you know, you can ask questions about, are we going to draft this position? Are we going to draft that position? It really just comes down to watching the tape, ranking the guys, and just drafting the best player when he's on the clock. And we say it every year. We're going to draft best player. If that's a tight end in the first round, we're going to draft a tight end in the first round. If it's a defensive tackle or a corner or safety, there are players at every single position that we like in this draft. So it just comes down to where they get picked, who's available, do we have a trade option, and what are we going to do?
You guys, what did you guys see in Caleb Haney to sign him, and are you open to having three quarterbacks on the 53?
Yeah, we are open to having three quarterbacks on the 53. And, you know, that was a conversation with Jim Caldwell and the offensive coaches probably led to that more than anything. And we felt like it would be important to bring a quarterback in at this point in time in order to learn the offense from the ground up. And he's a talented guy. He's played in games. Maybe hasn't been the ideal situation for him yet. But based on the evaluation of our pro department with Vince Newsom and our coaches, they felt like he fit us pretty well. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I, you know, don't know him that well. Personally, but I can't wait to get to know him as a player. And if he fits the bill, he could be our third quarterback.
Coach, Brian Hall's really transformed himself to move to linebacker. Is there any other players that you? Is there any other players that you've kind of encouraged to change the way they look a little bit to play different positions, or anybody that should be on our radar?
No, no, no position changes, Isaac. Can you think of any?
No,
nothing, nothing like that. Yeah. Purnell?
Yeah, he's going from an end to a rush, but he's still an end.
Right.
Yeah.
With our defense, you know, you can talk about Purnell a little bit because are we an odd team or are we an even team? We're kind of a hybrid, you know, 4-3, 3-4 team. So we're going to emphasize Purnell a little bit more at outside linebacker, you know, in Terrell Suggs' spot and see how he does out there. But he'll still bounce. He's an outside linebacker that can play defensive end, and he'll be a defensive end pass rusher in our even fronts in our pass rush scheme. So that's probably the only other guy. But Brian's done a great job. He's already lost 20 or so pounds. He looks really good. And he played linebacker in high school. And he's excited about it.
He's excited about it.
All right. We have, by the way, two number one big-time colleges who became Hall of Famers here today with Lenny Moore and Ozzie Newsom. And Ozzie, I'm going to put you on the spot only because Eric mentioned the iPhone. These guys, as in your business, are under a lot of pressure and they have to relieve tension every now and then. And one night, Ozzie took his old phone home a few years ago, and it wasn't what you thought it was going to be. Wasn't it in a different language?
Well, yeah. Portuguese or something?
Portuguese.
Yeah, maybe. There are people in this building that like to pull pranks on people in this building. And sometimes even the general manager can get consumed by having a prank pulled on him. And your phone ends up coming out with some language that you have no idea.
Swahili.
And you're not smart enough to change it back. That's probably the problem, but it happens in this building. You know, we do have a little fun.
Portuguese relatives? I think there's some descent there.
Things happen in this building. We have a lot of fun in this building. You know, we do a lot of work, but we do have some fun.
My favorite all-time, I got to tell the one story. My favorite all-time happened a year ago. Pat Moriarty ordered some shoes, right, Kevin? He ordered some shoes. Some kind of loafer, like
nice shoes.
Johnson & Murphy, like Johnson & Murphy loafers. It's the same shoe he always wears. So he couldn't wait. He kept talking about they were going to come in the mail to the office. So they come into the mail, and he opens them up. He opens the package up. It just came in the mail, and it is Johnson & Murphy loafers, but it's like a worn pair. And Eric swore that that's how they do it now. It's like a pair of blue jeans. They get the worn version. And somehow he got in there, obviously, and took the thing apart, took the new shoes out, put the old shoes back in, wrapped it back up, and put it on his desk.
They were his shoes. And he kept saying, "These are my shoes." And I said, "I know, you just bought them. They are your shoes." And he kept saying, "No, you don't want to. These are my shoes."
All right. Guys, thank you very much.
Tell the story about drafting Tim Couch.